Hi, everybody. I'm Ryan. I'm an addict. I just want to take a brief moment of silence to by the God of my understanding here to help me give you a clear message. Like I said, my name's Ryan. I'm an addict. A little bit about myself. I'm 37 years old. I'm from a small little steel mill coal mining town. I grew up with a loving family. My parents, there's like no divorce in my family. I didn't have any like real traumatic upbringing or anything like that. A lot of love. I think growing up, I kind of realized I was an addict at a young age. You know, now looking back through some step work, I think my my first experience with addiction was bullying. I grew up, I was a chubby little redheaded kid in town, and everybody picked on me. And so I started bullying them and beating people up and stuff like that. And so like growing up, like most of my friendships or relationships were real false. You know, like nobody really hung out with me because they liked me. It was because they were afraid of me. So I cheated myself out of that, you know. And I liked that power and that feeling over people. Through the years, like I noticed, like, I went to the dentist at a real young age. Like, I was, like, 11, and I remember they gave me, like, Tylenol 3s, and, like, I liked the way they made me feel. And I had to get this procedure done. I had a real bad tooth, and my dentist gave me this little pill, and he was like, don't take this until you're an hour before you come. And he's like, and make sure you have somebody drive you. And I walked out, and I ate it, and I got all messed up, and I told him that my mom washed it, and I left it in my pants. So I started manipulating for drugs at a real young age. I'm not going to get a whole bunch into my using, man. It started with a joint and ended with a needle in my arm. I used to the point, I'll tell you where my disease took me, you know, like, I OD'd in front of my 8-year-old daughter who had to give me CPR and call an ambulance for me. Saved my life. That wasn't enough to quit. When my mother was dying in a hospice unit, and everybody was by her side holding her hand, I was in the bathroom shooting dust. I couldn't get out of there. A couple days later at the funeral, while my family was up at the casket and everybody was paying their respects, I was in the bathroom shooting dope, man. I couldn't get out of there. So that's like some of the lows that it took me to. You know, we've all been there. We all know about those. I'm going to focus a little bit more on like what I did to, you know, stay clean. I came to meetings regularly. I went to rehab. I went to rehab before, and the first time I went, I had no intentions on staying clean. The Commonwealth of Pennsylvania said you're going to rehab or you're going to jail. So I went there and tried to get a piece of ass like everybody else. And, you know, screwed off, made jokes, sat in the back, you know, nearly got thrown out. I think I was high within 3 days of getting out of rehab. I ended up, like, breaking my wrist and getting a prescription for Oxycontin. So my probation officer, like, just quit even checking on me, you know, manipulated the system. That's what I did. My clean date's October 13, 2009. That day, I don't know why, but I had dope, I had money. I woke up that day. I got it in like I did any other day, and I didn't want to. I was just like, I don't want to do this anymore. And I went up my dad's. It was like 5 a.m, and I was like, man, I got to go to rehab. And he's like, it's 5 a.m, you know, you got to go now. So if I don't go now, I'm not going to go. So I ended up going to a hospital, telling them I was a drug addict. They sent security in and searched me and everything, and, you know, kind of gave me a hard time about it. And they called down to a rehab facility, and they're like, yeah, there's a bed for you down there. So went down there, and I get in there, and they're like, we're full. I don't know who told you that. And I'm like, man, we got to stop for some shit on the way back. You know, it was the first thing that went through my head. And just then, the elevator doors opened up, and this kid come out, mother effing the staff, and they're like, a bed just opened up. And I'm like, oh. So I ended up getting in there, man, and I wanted to be there. I wasn't forced to be there or anything else. And that was just like God working in my life. It was the 13th. My room number was like 213, and like everything just worked out good. So I decided this time I was going to like take suggestions. I sat in the front as close as possible because the girls sat in the front and I wasn't allowed to sit too close to them. But I didn't hang out with the kids that were dicking around and making jokes and stuff like that. I pretty much kept to myself, did what I had to do. I got with a counselor and stuff in there. I had a good lineup of meetings for when I got out. I got out and I went to meetings regularly. I'm a union steel worker. I ended up keeping my job through the union, but I had a pretty good job when I got out. I had a car. I got my dad took me to my first probably like, I don't know, 30 or 40 meetings. Like, I tried to give myself the least amount of possible chance to screw up. Like, my dad still has access to my bank account. I got almost 5 years clean, and he still can look at it anytime he wants. My dad held my finances. My dad took me to my first 40 meetings. Like, I really, really wanted to stay clean. I wasn't trying to act like I had this or that I was bigger than the disease. So I took about every suggestion. I remember early recovery. I think what helped me start taking suggestions, I remember as early recovery, everybody's like, hang out with people with clean time. You know, make sure you don't hang out with the newcomers. Well, I took like every suggestion but that one. And I was hanging out with a kid. He had about the same amount of clean time as me. And instead of calling somebody that had some clean time, I had like maybe 60 days clean. And I'm like, hey, man, I want to get high. And he's like, so do I, man. I know a guy. Stop down. And I was on my way there. And it never happened. And the next day, that kid OD'd and ended up back in jail. So, like, God was doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. So after that, I was like, maybe I better listen to these guys, you know. But, like, one of the most important things I did, man, I came into the rooms, and the first person I seen was my sponsor and another kid that's dead because of this disease. They hugged me, and at first I thought that was real weird, and I didn't like it, and I was real uncomfortable with it. But it also made me kind of feel good, you know, that, like, somebody came near me, because, like, I came in, I looked like a rat on decon. Like, I was 160 pounds of track marks. And, like, I remember they passed a list around for me, and they're like, if you feel like using, call these numbers, you know. And I went back to work, and this one dude was like, hey, you want to get high? You know, he had some lines, and I was like, nah, man, I can't, you know. And he kept being real persistent. And I'm like, well, I'm going to call one of these assholes because I know they're not going to answer. And I called the first one, and he didn't answer. And I was like, I knew it. You know what I mean? And I called the second one, and he answered. And while I was talking to him, the other guy called back, and the other guy is my sponsor today. So I was like, wow. And then after I got done talking to them, I really didn't feel like using it anymore. So I used that asset, you know what I mean, early in recovery. I really communicated with other recovering addicts. You know, I went to meetings every day for over 90 days. I hung out with people that had over a year clean, you know, and, you know, people got to know me just from me being there all the time. Like, even if I didn't want to talk about what was going on, people knew my body language and, you know, the way I acted. So even if I didn't want to, you know, tell somebody that something was bothering me, like, they seen me so much, they knew, you know, and they kind of got it out of me. So, you know, just being there all the time is a good thing. You know, you learn somebody's personality. But I remember when I was asking my sponsor, when I was going to ask my sponsor to sponsor me, and I actually didn't know it, but I was talking to my grand sponsor at the time, and he asked me if I'd found a sponsor yet. And I'm like, no, I was going to ask JJ tonight. And he's like, well, do it. You know, and I'm like, yeah, I'm going to. And then they ended up sharing about sponsoring people at the meeting, and my sponsor was like, you know, I'm fed up with my sponsees. He's like, yeah, none of them can stay clean. I feel like I'm failing them. I feel like I'm doing something wrong. I'm like, shit, that's out. So I wasn't going to ask him. And I remember asking him after the meeting, I'm like, hey, man, you sponsoring anybody? And he was kind of just like, yeah, man, what are you willing to do for your recovery? And I'm like, whatever it takes. And he's like, we'll see. You know, call me tomorrow. And, yeah, he's been my sponsor for almost 5 years now. So, and we worked quite a bit of steps together. The steps are, like, invaluable, man. Like, clean or not clean, I'd be in jail without the steps today. One of the things I want to, like, kind of emphasize on this is, like, you know, our program is based on a lot of, like, you know, you got to accept this and accept this. There's a lot of shit you don't got to accept, man. Like, there's a lot of things that, like, I see a lot of addicts, and I've done it myself because I'm scared. You know what I mean? Like, I want to accept something instead of fighting for it or doing any legwork for it. In my, like, four years and 9 months of recovery, man, I was able to get, like, full custody of my son against all odds. I mean, I don't know if any of you guys are struggling with that or anything like that, but they're dealing with the court system. But, you know, I went to the courthouse back and forth for years. contesting with another person, and everybody told me that I would never get custody of my kid because I was a recovering addict. And this other person was an active addiction, and just fell in every drug test, and I get every time I go, it's clean, and you know, and every time I would go there, they would act out and in ways that, like, if I acted like that, I was sure that I would have been tasered and handcuffed. And I'm not kidding, man, but I stayed persistent with it. I didn't give up, you know what I mean? I didn't let my guard down and decide that I could act like that, you know? I just, you know, ate the shit sandwich and kept persevering it, you know? Kept doing the next right thing and kept trying harder. And it was a long, hard road, but, I mean, there's a lot of things that you don't got to accept, you know what I mean? If it's God's will and it's the right thing and you're doing the next right thing, I mean, this stuff doesn't come on the cheap, man. Like, everything that I've earned in my recovery, I fought hard for. And I had to fight through a lot of feelings, a lot of discomfort, and none of it was handed to me. And none of it was simple. You know what I mean? It was a lot of doors in my face that I had to reopen and, you know, find other routes and other means to get in. But I didn't give up. And I didn't let myself fall into, like, just because it didn't go my way, I'm gonna be an ass today. I'm gonna force my will on somebody or show them how to be a bigger asshole, because, like, that was my MO through using. Like, when I didn't get my way, it either resulted in violence, anger, you know what I mean, boo-hoo, poor me, crying, whatever it had to get what I wanted. But instead, I just kept doing the next right thing and trying harder and trying harder. And, you know, things come together, but they didn't come in my time. You know, none of them came in my time. It was a lot of, like I said, it was a lot of eating shit sandwiches and just trying. And, you know, I wouldn't have been able to do it without the steps and without the people in these rooms. You know, there was a lot of, like, I mean, I ended up running into, you know, people that I know from these rooms in the courthouse that day that, you know, have ties into there and stuff that, you know, that helped rid me of fear before I walked into that courtroom, and my sponsor and my Wee, who I called before I went there. And, you know, when I was at my wit's end and, like, ready, like, you know, I know they're doing drugs around my kid in this house, I'm just going to go there and kick the door in and I'm going to get them out of there. You know what I mean? There was a lot of people talking. I had to fight a lot of feelings, man. It's scary. You know, you can talk about faith and all that all you want, but until you have it in your life like that. And it also helped me through my step work, because, like, I don't know, without that, I don't know if I could have truly had the empathy I do for, like, my father, who I put through the same shit, you know what I mean, my children, my mother, because, like, you know, when I worked through some steps, and, like, I really got a chance to, like, man, I got to feel that firsthand, the fear that they had when I was out there using, and the pain that I caused, you know what I mean, I got to feel that firsthand, and I don't know, it just made it made working the, you know, some steps a lot better for me. And like, I don't know, like, I don't think I would have truly had, like, you know, the compassion and the empathy if I wouldn't have went through that. I mean, maybe I would have, but I don't know, it really let me see things in a different perspective. And you know, these steps taught me how to be, like, a father today. They taught me how to be a son today. You know, they taught me how to be a husband and a friend and, like, an employee. They didn't just teach me how to stay off drugs. Like, they teach me how to make a little bit conscious, better decisions. They teach me how to not keep hurting people, even if I'm not on drugs. I know, like, it's kind of off base, but, like, when I grew up, you know, like, any time, like, that I got hurt or anything, my dad was like, and I don't know about your dad, but my dad was never like, sit down here, talk about your feelings, you know? Yeah, he never did that, you know? He was like, suck it up, you know what I mean? Like, as a man, we don't get taught that, hey, come on, let's talk about this. We get taught, suck it up, cupcake, you know what I mean? And I still catch myself doing it to my son, you know what I mean? And if it's something physical, you know, sometimes I do that, but I do try to sit down and talk to my kids on an emotional level when I know that their feelings are hurt. And I didn't grow up doing that. You know, like, these steps taught me that. And, you know, I always thought that I was less of a man for wanting to talk about my feelings or something like that. Like, I don't, not that my dad was a bad guy, because my dad was a great person. But just, you know, that's how he was brought up. That's how, you know, and like I said, I still find myself doing that. So I'm, like, trying to break away from that, you know, because a lot of where I got where I was at was because I didn't want to talk about my feelings. I wanted to cover them. And like I said, I think of it as men, especially for myself, you know, like I felt less than, you know, I felt like a sissy talking about my feelings. And I don't know, I didn't, you know, being out there on the streets, I didn't get no tough guys, hard ass, badasses, checks or trophies in the mail, man. All I got was fines and broken bones and sore joints now, you know what I mean? Like, that's the only thing I got from acting that way, you know what I mean? Like, today, like, the things that I got in my life, like, I'm not scaring anybody to be respected. You know what I mean? I'm doing the next right thing. You know, I'm not, you know, lying or buying shit for people to like me. I'm just giving kindness in return. You know, and those are things that are important to me. Like, out there using, like, all the values that were installed in me as a child, like, became defects. You know, like, being honest and loving and caring, that don't get you high. You know, like, I had to be a liar and a manipulator and a stealer, and you know what I mean, and violent. Like, that's what got me high, you know, and I seen that as assets, you know what I mean. I bragged about that. Like, if I hurt somebody bad, like, you know, I was telling everybody in town about how I hurt that person, you know. I was putting that on my badass resume, you know. And like today, like, the things that are important to me, because, like, I mean, there was a time in my life where I didn't use, and like, I've lost everything to addiction, and I've lost everything not using through divorce. You know what I mean? Like, the only thing that, like, I truly have, that I own, is my character. You know, my values, you know what I mean? Like, I can give it away, but nobody's taking it off me. You know what I mean? Like, if I put one in me, I know I'll give it away real fast. But, like, you know, what matters to me today is, like, you know, being a good father. Like, when I die, like, nobody's going to be like, yeah, he had a nice Harley or a nice truck or anything like that. They're going to either be like, he was a good father, man. He was a good friend. He was there for me. You know what I mean? Like, that's what's important, like, my character. That's all I got. That's all I can take with me. You know, like, tomorrow, like, the government could come in and say, hey, we're building a lake here. Get out of your house. You know what I mean? A thief could steal my car while I'm here speaking. You know what I mean? Any of that stuff can be taken. Anything like that. But, like, you know, like, my character and my pride and, like all that stuff like that, I can give it away, man, but nobody's taking it from me. That's all I own, you know? It's all I'm ever going to own, for sure. That's who I am. So, like, I hold that stuff dear. You know what I mean? Like, I want people to, you know, like me because I'm a good person, not because of what I have or because what I can give them. And it's a nice feeling. It's a nice feeling when, you know, somebody looks up to you, because not because you got a big bag of Coke in your pocket, because you're a good person. Because, like I said, I lived that false life of, you know, I thought everybody wanted to be I was so popular and everybody wanted to be my friend. It turns out that cocaine is real popular. You know what I mean? Brian Rupert wasn't that popular. But cocaine was awful, like, you know, popular. But, because as soon as that shit went away, man, so did all those people that I thought were my friends. Mm-hmm. You know? So, you know, I just try to hold my characters and values, like, real dear to me now, you know? And, the connection I have with God today, I never thought I'd be a big God person. You know, I was raised as a Catholic child, but you know, I don't consider myself that today. But I pray every morning and every night. I pray with my son every night, man. We kneel down and we pray together, and that's like the best feeling in the world. You know what I mean? Like, listening to my son pray with me. I mean, I look forward to that every night. Never thought I would do it. You know what I mean? Never thought I'd be a big prayer, but my belief on it is, like, if I wouldn't have been asking for God's help this whole time since early recovery, because I started early, like, in rehab, because I heard a couple guys that had a good amount of clean time at my first meeting in Aliquippa, and all these guys that had clean time was like, I pray every day. And I'm like, well, I'll do it. If it only takes a couple minutes, I'll try it if that's all it takes. And, like, I couldn't sleep for days in rehab, and I tried praying, man, and I got a little bit of rest, and it gave me a little bit of faith to keep, you know, praying. And without praying and asking for God's help every day to help get me through the day and be a better person and stuff like that, I would think I'm doing this. You know what I mean? I would think that I'm bigger than the disease. And I thought that I was bigger than the disease before. And then, like I said, I kept me clean for 3 days. And man, I have a real good relationship with the God of my understanding. You know, anything that I'm doing in my life, any big decision, I run it by them, you know what I mean? And I get a good feeling from it. You know, I start my day with it. I end my night with it. I talk to God like he's my friend and he's right beside me all throughout the day, whether I'm on my bike, in my car, at the meal, you know what I mean? Like, I just talk to him like he's there, you know what I mean? I don't necessarily do Hail Marys and the Rosary. I just talk to him like a friend, you know what I mean? Now, I do pray, you know, with prayers that I've learned here and, you know, other ways to make a conscious contact and, like, humble myself and get on my knees and talk to him. But it's part of my process, you know. But I don't know. Without a God in my life, man, I don't think I could. I couldn't do this, you know. You know, but I don't know. If that's pretty much all I got. That's what I did to stay here, and that's what I did to stick around. You know, and what else I try to do is a couple things I try to do every day is just try not to hurt myself or anybody else. You know, I try to make a positive impact in somebody else's life, and I don't take the first one no matter what. And that's all I got. Thanks. Thanks, Ryan.
Thanks.
Our second speaker is Vaughn W. from the Hope for Today in the Northeast area.
Okay, me. My name is Vaughn. I'm an addict.
Vaughn.
How about we say that serenity prayer just one more time? God.
God. Grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change. Courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
All right, Vaughn, I'm an addict, and I really don't know where this is going to go. I guess to share a little bit of my experience, strength, and hope. You know, I came up to this campsite a couple years ago and spoke, but the wife and I just drove up. I spoke and I left. Now, these buddies in my support group, they done got me in on this camping thing and shit, man. And, you know, let me back up a little bit. This is the true story of it. The missus was asked to speak at the spiritual retreat. I says, honey, would you like for me to go with you? She says, sure. I said, I tell you what, find us a nice cabin up in that area. And, you know, I'll go up, we'll stay in the cabin and we'll speak, all right? Well, one of my buddies puts it into her mind that, hey, we go up there every year and we sleep in fucking tents, you know? Next thing I know, she's coming in the house from Walmart. She got the tent, she got the sleeping bag, she got the lantern, she got everything. And I said, well, all right, you got some blow-up mattresses. All right, well, we're going to do it. Let's do it. So, cool. So now this started out a weekend away with me and the missus in the cabin. Now we're in a tent. This is cool. Then my buddy tells her, you know, there's a lot of little kids we take up there with us, and they all run around and have a good time. Now we got a grandson with us. All right, so now it's me, the missus, and the grandson in a tent. And then as we get ready to leave, she says, you know, we can't leave the other grandson. So that was me, the missus, two grandsons, and a tent. And I got to tell you that I had a good time, that experience, and this experience here has been somewhat cool, but like we're like 50 miles outside of the fucking what's going on, you know. I think we're like 50 miles that way somewhere, but you know, it's cool. But last night, you know, this whole thing is sort of new to me, and I got up. I still, you know, I'm used to being home, getting up and go to the fucking bathroom, you know. The last night I get up, I'm all half asleep. When I go out, I'm like, I'm looking up there. I'm like, man, that fucking thing is way up there. I ain't walking up there to take a piss. So I just figured, you know, just take a piss. You know, you're out in the woods, go on, take a piss. I'm pissing. I'm like, what the fuck is that? Here, my shirt's hanging down. I didn't even tell the guys because they harassed me. But, oh, yeah, I pissed all over my shirt last night. We're still having a good time camping. We can share that because we're at a men's wrap, right? Yeah. Y'all guys ain't going to say nothing, right? Yeah, right. You know, we can't wait to call your sponsor, man. This dude pissed all on his shirt. But anyway, I'm happy to be here. I'm honored to be here. You know, anytime I ask to do something for Narcotics Anonymous, it's definitely an honor and a privilege. And any time to ask to do something with a group of men, it really just, man, steps it up for me. I think it's powerful when men can get together in any positive setting and really share our experience, strengths, and hope with one another. Trust me, the disease does not like this. Nonetheless, my clean date's August 5th of 91. And, you know, I've been doing this thing for a couple of days and just thinking a little bit, you know, when I came to Narcotics Anonymous, let me say this, I'll qualify in a couple sentences here. I started out with alcohol at the age of 8 and I ended with crack cocaine at the age of 22. And that was a 3-year run on crack cocaine. And you know what all comes with that, in and out of jail and things like that. But I can remember at the end when I was 22, you've heard people say before, I've heard people say before, the drugs stopped working, and that was definitely the case. You know, there was a night, had a bunch, had money to get more, it was on and cracking, and no matter what I smoked, no matter what I drank, it was just this hole inside of me, man, that I couldn't, you know, I just couldn't fill up. Now, you know, my upbringing, I come from generations of alcoholics and addicts. I was the first one to ever break that cycle, thanks to Narcotics Anonymous. But so I'm gonna give you a little bit what we call in my field a genogram. So we grew up in a house with my grandmother and my grandfather. All right, my dad had an affair on his wife with my mom to have me and my sister. But we stayed in the house with the grandmother. But yeah, I would go over there and he would come over there. It was, you know, every time I tell that story, like, this committee in my head starts saying, like, Jerry, Jerry, you know, that sick shit that gets all twisted up and stuff. But one thing Narcotics Anonymous has taught me is that the blame game ain't cool, Vaughn. You know, it doesn't matter, you know, hey, my mom, you know, I'm one of those kids that got high with his mom, you know, but she did the best that she could do when she did it. Hey, my dad did what he did because he did what he did. I don't have no excuse, and Narcotics Anonymous has taught me this, I don't have no excuse to get high today. None at all. And when I came into this fellowship, it wasn't because I didn't have no more hustle. It wasn't because they stopped serving me at the state store. It wasn't because I couldn't get more dope. It was because I had a hole inside of me that was so big that the drugs stopped working. And on top of that, every third day on the second Wednesday of the third month, I always heard this thing, voice saying, up against the car, up against the car. And I just started going in and out of jail. Like, it was like crazy. Every time I looked up, I was in the county jail. And I said, you know, something has to change here. Now, I'm one of those guys who met, you know, I'm married. I've been married for 20 years. And I just celebrated 23 years, and my wife celebrated 23 years. And we met in active addiction. I mean, you know, her thing was hustling, and my thing was hustling, and you know, we just did that thing, and you don't hear that. I'm very fortunate. I thank God every day for my wife and for my life and for my marriage, because usually it doesn't work out like that in Narcotics Anonymous. But nonetheless, she was the one that introduced me to this fellowship. And I can remember, like, because I didn't know, you know, I really didn't know much about Narcotics Anonymous. I didn't know much about treatment. I just thought that, like, you know, hey, man, if you want to quit this shit, he just set the shit down and quit. And then as I thought about that, I said, well, I tried that a few times. Like, you know, I tried to quit a few times, and it would last. Like a prime example, one day my buddy and I were standing out on the avenue all night smoking crack. It's about, you know, 6 o'clock in the morning. You know how it is. You've been out all night. You're hanging out. You're trying to make something happen, you know. And these guys pull up in a car. There was four white guys in the car. They pulled up. And my buddy looked at me, he says, I got this one, and I says, I'll meet you at the spot. Cool, he jumps in the car. I go up to the spot, and I'm waiting, and I'm starting to think, because, you know, we do this every now and then. We double back on each other, you know what I'm saying? I say, yeah, we're hanging together, but I'll veer off another way. I'm thinking, man, he must rip these guys off and then double backed on me, you know? So I'm up there at this abandoned house, and this girl comes up, and I said to her, I says, hey, did you see Dennis? And she says to me, she says, you didn't hear. I said, what? Didn't hear what? She says, Dennis just got shot in the back with a .357. He tried to rip these guys off, and they took him down in the river. They told him to start running, and when he started to run, bam, they blew his back out. Now, the only thing that separated me from Dennis was Dennis spoke up first. You guys following me? This is sometimes I think God, I know that God was working in my life long before I even knew that he was working. But you would think that, you know, when I heard that, like, I became paralyzed, and there was like a fear that came over me. And I said, man, I am done with this shit. I am not doing this stuff no more. I'm done. That lasted like 2 days. Right back out there on the avenue doing the same thing that he had. So when I came in Narcotics Anonymous, I had no role models. You know, I couldn't look back and see. You know, I was 22 years old, had very, you know, job. You know, I would work a job in a plastic factory until I got the first check, and then I would quit. Then I took another job in a factory because the guy that sold weed took the job in the factory, and I figured, hey, can you ride me to work every day? And he said, yeah, okay, I'll take that job too. Worked to the first check. Then this other job that I had, me and my buddy decided in the midst of getting high that we need to get jobs and shit, right? So we go down to this, it was a plastic factory, and we walk in, and they said, we're going to give you an interview today. And I says, okay, this is great. Interviewed us, we both came out, we said, man, we got the job and shit. We were all happy. They said, start tonight, 4 to 12, right? I come down on a 4 to 12 shift, hit the clock, walk out on the floor. I see this fork truck driver, he drives by, he got a case of beer on the back of the fork truck. I looked at my buddy, he looked at me, I said, we're retiring from this fucking place. Oh, man, I thought the heavens had parted. What? You know, and you know what that led to? About a month, the next thing you know, we were in the back smoking crack, and that went out the way. So when I came in, you know, at 22, I really didn't have, like, a good foundation on what it means to really to be a mature man, to be a man, period. I didn't have that relationship with my dad where, you know, he brought me up and, you know, showed me how to do shit. That stuff was like, no, it just didn't happen. And so everything I got from the rooms. And that's no bullshit lie, man. Like, everything I got from the rooms. And what I did was I picked up on things earlier on. One of the things I picked up on when they said, stick with the winners. I said, okay, winners. Winners, what's a winner? Well, I had to decide what direction was I heading in. What are you trying to do, Vaughn? So back then when I came in, one of the things that was real important to me was being faithful to my wife. That was important because I did not want to do like my dad did, man. I didn't want that to happen. I didn't want my kids growing up like that. And so I looked around in the rooms and I identified guys that were married and in long-term relationships. And then I watched them when we went out to eat afterwards. So I would watch them when we got together and went to events and just saw how they acted. You know, was this guy talking shit in the room about how good, how faithful he was? Then we get out and he's trying to hit on every girl. Or was this guy the real deal? So I identified a few that were real. See, my story in my 23 years is nothing more than a copycat story, bro. You know, because one thing I know is that the disease of addiction does not discriminate, but neither does recovery. The literature tells me it's available to us all. Am I right? Right? So I don't have to be nothing special, nothing great. You know, I don't have to have so much money, you know, race, creed, religion, none of that shit matters. The playing field's even. So I identified a couple of those guys, and I picked their brains. I just did what they did. And one day I remember riding with my wife, and because this was all new to me, man. You know, a relationship prior to that was like, okay, I got a six-pack, I got a fifth of Wild Irish Rose, preferably on ice, and some slow jam music, and I'm going to try to lay you down and get in those pants. That was it, period. So this was all new, and I remember it was becoming so stressful on me trying to live a different life because I was like a fish out of water at the age of 22 that I said to her, honey, I says, here's the deal. I said, I really want to be a good mate for you, and I really want to treat you well. I said, but I don't really know how. And she looked over at me and she said, you'll get it. And I just smiled. It was like this weight just lifted off. Because, you know, I wasn't being phony, man. That shit had to, you know, I had to check. This was about being authentic. This was about being real. This was about sharing my experience. I would never tell a woman that. You know, I would never say that. And I damn sure wouldn't tell a guy that. So that was one of the things that was important to me. When I came in, I had a lot of legal issues, man. I mean, I came to Narcotics Anonymous. I had a ton of shit. Matter of fact, I'm that guy that came in and had to do time clean because, you know, the judge just wasn't trying to hear that, you know, hey, you're in recovery shit. That ain't wiping your slate clean, Vaughn. You know, to make a long story short, I had 22 counts of sales and possession, and I was looking at state time. And one of the things that I did was, you know, I just dove into this fellowship and just started doing the next right thing. And I remember there was a professional nurse that was in the fellowship. She was a predecessor. Her name was Barb C. And Barb C. had the same scenario, but Barb C. went through it, and she came out clean and continued forth. And that gave me so much hope, you know. And here's how it went. I got involved with H&I. I went into a facility one week with H&I. The next week, the very next week, H&I came in, and I was in the facility, you know. And, you know, so when I roll up in this camp, you know, those hard dudes from the state, you know, they said, man, ain't you that motherfucker that came up in here with NA last week? And, I mean, you talking about humility, you know, and I am. And well, here's my story and stuff. But what I realized was that for the first time in my life, and my man was talking about character, I can appreciate what he said. For the first time in my life, Narcotics Anonymous gave me something that it didn't matter with the judge. When he hit that gavel, he couldn't take it away from me. My probation officer couldn't take it away from me. Couldn't nobody take this away from me, because for the first time in my life, I had something inside of me, man, that no one could take it. Like my man said, I could give it away, but you can't take it. And I held on to that, man. I held on to that near and dear. When I went to that courtroom, I had gotten to the place in my life that no matter what he said, he wasn't taking this shit away from me. Because, you know, my worst time that I ever did in prison was out on the street. It wasn't when I went to county. I'm talking about when I was out on the street free. I was locked up, bro. You know, just locked up. Because once I take that first one, that shit dictated to me where to go, how to go, when to go, who to go with, how to do it. Don't eat. Don't sleep. Don't wash your ass. You know, don't. I mean, everything was just like being on remote control. So one of the things that I picked up on was that, like, Vaughn, you got a lot of stuff going on with you. And the drugs is definitely just a symptom of your fucked up life. You know, like, I picked up on that, like, real early. And what my predecessors said, they said, the answers are in the steps, Vaughn. They said, the answers are in the steps. And right around that time, right around step three, something lit up in me where just being able to say, I'm Vaughn, I'm an addict, and I've been clean for X amount of days, that just wasn't cutting it for me, man. It just wasn't cutting it for me, because I said, well, there's a lot of people that are clean, but really, how many people are, like, really recovering and working on shit? And what I did was I dove into the steps, and what I got out of that was I began to change as an individual. You know, I began to be able to, you know, whenever something was going on in my life and I was at a meeting and it was painful stuff, it was okay to cry, Vaughn. You ain't got to suck that shit in no more and walk out with your chest all held out talking about, you know, it's going to be all right. No, it's not all right. You feel like crying, cry. I don't care who's around. You know, and it has helped me to mature and to become a better person. And one of the things that I'm grateful for the most in Narcotics Anonymous is just to wake up in the morning and have a freaking choice, man. Just to wake up in the morning and be able to say, Vaughn, you know, do you want to continue this journey or what? Vaughn, do you want to go left or do you want to go right? Because for so long, I didn't have that choice. The choice was already made for me, man. When I got up before Narcotics Anonymous, it was already made. I knew it was about pounding the pavement, ways and means to get more. And Narcotics Anonymous has given me that, you know. I remember back then when I came in, there weren't, like, at least in my area, there weren't a lot of young people. I mean, I didn't know too many other 22-year-olds back then that was really doing this thing. And I remember going home to my mom after a meeting. I said, Mom, I said, I don't know if I want to do this shit. I said, these guys are all old. They want to go to Eaton Park and shit. I mean, who wants to do that shit? And she said, well, she says, you can either do that, or you can go on back to the streets. She gave it to me straight and clear. I said, well, you know what? Let me go on down to Eaton Park and sit my ass down, you know? And what's so funny about that is that, like, back there, because, you know, I hadn't got to that place where, like, I mean, I didn't have no money. I didn't have shit, man. Like, I really didn't have shit when I came to Narcotics Anonymous. And so, you know, when guys would say, hey, Vaughn, we're going out to eat, I would say, ah, nah, you know, I'm fine. Meanwhile, stomach growling like a motherfucker. You know what I'm saying? Or then when I would go down there, they'd say, hey, Vaughn, what do you want? Ah, you know what, man, I'm fine. Stomach growling like a motherfucker. And what would really get me is that when guys would order shit and only eat half of it, and then when the waitress would come and take that shit away, man, I was looking at it like, damn, I could have went for some of that, you know? But nonetheless, some years later, my predecessors told me, they said, Vaughn, we knew your ass was broke. We knew you was broke. But we wanted you to have the opportunity to build it up in you. To say, hey man, I don't have no money. Sure. Thank you. You know, if you'll buy me something, that's fine. But say, well, there's a process. There's certain things that I need to experience on a feeling. You know, and that's why, like, I've never been a real big fan of, like, when I go to meetings and I sit down and I say, they'll pass me this slip. They'll say, well, what is this? So sign your name and number for the guy over there. No, no, let that motherfucker come to me. Excuse my language. He needs to come to me or to whoever he needs to come to, because there's a humility factor that comes into play of me walking up to you and saying, hey, man, can I get your number? Not somebody handing me a piece of paper, and then the guy don't never call me. I don't know if he calls other people on the list, but I never get calls from those guys. I never get calls from those guys, but there's something to be said. You know, when I had to go up to my sponsor for the first time and say, hey, man, will you be my sponsor? There was a humility piece in there that, like, I mean, you know, I had to put all that tough guy street shit aside, humble myself, and ask somebody as a grown man to guide me in a new way of life. Not, hey man, I think I like to. Hey, could you ask him to be my sponsor? What the fuck are you talking about, man? No, you know, and what I'm finding out is that things are getting faster for us in this fellowship. It's just getting more dangerous for us in this fellowship. And it seems to me the faster it gets and the more dangerous it gets, the more people want an easier way with this shit. There ain't no microwave Narcotics Anonymous. There ain't no easy way in Narcotics Anonymous. This is for real men that want to step up in their life, ask for help, and get the help that's available to us all. To us all. And I tell the guys that I sponsor all the time, this is great. This is the best thing that ever happened to me. But be ready to lace up them boots, baby. You better be ready to lace up them boots. I mean, you got to come out full metal jacket with this shit, because life on life terms ain't no joke. You know, people are still dying. People are still OD. People are still getting divorced. People are still getting fired. I mean, you know, losing their kids clean. And you got to be able to suck that shit up and keep on walking, walk through the pain, and not look for no easier way. You know, these guys, well, I don't want to fucking detox, man. I want to do some stuff. Motherfucker, you need to crawl around on your floor, sweat and shit on yourself, so that you know maybe then you'll stop going in and out of this fellowship, man. Not that easy way. Now, anytime I had an easy way, listen, I was running with some cats at one time, these Haitians from New York. And that dope was coming in fast. I mean, money was rolling in fast. You know how much of that shit I got? Nothing. Because it all came easy. It all was fast. It came easy. It went easy. Every time I went to jail, my family bailed me out. Every single time. They bailed me out. And when I got out, they say, well, Vaughn, here's another package. You just got to work that shit off your bill. You know who got me out the last time? Nobody. You know how many times I went back since then? None. That's what I'm talking about, man. So, you know, like, my approach to this, you know, is that, like, I believe it's a simple program. I believe I have a tendency to complicate it at sometimes. But narcotics at its purest form, it's real simple, man. It's real simple. And this shit works. I mean, it really works. So that, like, I don't know if because my spirit was so dead when I came in here. I don't know if it's because I had that hole inside of me that I couldn't feel no more. But going to meetings ain't never been no chore to me. I've never felt like, oh, shit, I got to go to one of those. See, that's not my story. And when I have guys tell me that, you know what I tell them? You ain't got to do shit. You ain't got to go. Don't do the 90 and 90. You don't want to go. Don't go, man. But when this motherfucking hammer drops, because it's going to drop, don't come crying to me with that bullshit, bro. You know, you come to me, you ask me for help. I tell you, not some top secret shit I got. I tell you what my predecessors told me. I pass it to you, and your response is, oh, man, I can't hear them. Fuck, man, I work 2 hours a day. I can't go to the meeting. You know what I'm saying? Oh, man, yo, really? Oh, really? Oh, man, yeah, man. this job is killing me, bro. I put in 4 hours a day and shit, man. I don't think I'm going to make it to my home tonight, for real. Like, seriously, well, here's one for you, bro. Don't go. Don't go. Because I don't have time, man, to joust back and forth with you. I don't have the energy to joust back and forth with you with some shit that has proven itself. Mm-hmm. That if you do these, our literature tells us, do a few basic things. It isn't no complicated mathematical equation. It's a few basic things that we do, and we reap the benefits, man. Another day clean. We can arrest this baby every day, a day at a time. Keep it shackled up. Because it's hell being the prisoner, the fucking jury, and the judge. And that's what we are. I'm the prisoner if I want to be. I'm the jury, I can convict myself. And I'm the judge, I can slam that gavel on myself. And check this out, got the key in my pocket to release this beast anytime I want to. Anytime I want to release that beast, I got the key. Ain't nobody else got that. I got the key. See, we don't use because things happen. We use and then put some shit on that. Well, this is why we use. No, I use because I got fired. Yeah, right? Or I use because my mom died. Or my dad died. Or I use because my old lady. No, no, no. See, you're tagging that shit on. And that's what the disease likes. It wants us to do that. But as men, we got to, you know, I always felt as though, since I've been in Narcotics Anonymous, that, like, I got a fucking responsibility, bro. Like, for real. You know? I got a responsibility. I got a responsibility to take care of my wife. I got a responsibility to my kids. I got a responsibility. When I say that I'm in recovery, that ain't no cupcake statement. What that is, I'm saying, man, I'm going to be the better man in all my affairs. I'm going to take the high road, baby. You understand what I'm saying? I ain't going to argue with you. I ain't going to try to scheme you. I ain't going to try to connive you. All that shit. You know, and then say, you know, but I'm clean. Or here's one for you, I ain't there yet. Well, when the fuck you going to get there? When you going to get there, man? I mean, damn, boy, you clean for 23 years, you ain't there yet. Well, you ain't there yet, you ain't never going to get there, man. And that's what it is, you know. We can laugh and we can joke about it, but I'm telling you, fellas, man, and I know I'm preaching to the choir with my predecessors and a lot of the guys that came after me. This shit is serious, man. This shit is real. This shit is real. They're not firing no fake rounds. These is live rounds being fired. This isn't no role play, man. This shit is real. And that's why when I go to, like, I take that shit serious. I've never went a week without going to a meeting. Never did it, man. I'm afraid. I'm just afraid. You know, a year 21, I did another 90 and 90. Because, I mean, I initially did it to help out a sponsee. He left out in week two. Week two, he left. You know, when I did the 90 and 90, 10 when I first came in, I didn't have the job. You know, I didn't have none of that shit. I mean, you know, you could do fucking 380 and 90 then. But I worked my ass off to do that 90 and 90, man. And I did it. You know, and I did it. So, you know, for most of my life, I worked full time. I went to school full time. I had a wife and three kids. So, you know, when people, you know, a dude called me the other day, one of my sponsors, he says, oh, man, I really want to go up to Penn State, Maine. I want to go to Penn State, Maine. All right, bro, hey, one of my favorite things is lost dreams awaken, new possibilities arrive. I believe that when we don't use, everything's back on the table, man. I think that I can accomplish anything that I put my mind to as long as I don't take the first one. Go on up there and meet with him. He goes up there, he meets with him, he calls me back, he says, oh, he says, I'm all bummed out. I'm not going to be able to go to school now. I'm like, well, what do you mean? Well, I can't get the funding. Okay, well, let me ask you a question. You default on your school loans or anything? No, I never had a school loan before. Wait a fucking minute, bro. I've been doing this for some time. You're not default on your loan. Okay, so maybe you can't go to Penn State, Maine and stay on campus, but you could go to a community college, start out there for 2 years, transfer over, you know. And I said, by the way, bro, you're 40 fucking years old. Your days of going to the main campus and staying on campus. Yeah, you'd be up there like a fucking water boy and shit. You don't do that stuff at 40 years, bro. You pissed that shit away, man. That was back when you was 18, 19. This dude's 40 years old. I want to stay up on Penn State, Maine.
Really?
I wonder why. It ain't for a fucking education. I can believe that, you know? You got to laugh, man. You got to laugh because you can understand. But let me say this in closing. I really enjoyed you guys today. And I think, if anything, I would like to reiterate what my man said before I came up here, the importance of staying connected with your higher power and the importance of character, more so as a man, you know, our character, our word and our character, man. You know, that's all we got, and I can appreciate him saying that. And some of you guys might not be there right now, but something he said that's powerful, share your prayer life with your kids, man. It'll do wonders. Thanks for letting me share.